Shouldn't say that. That's really spooky. Oh, well. We'll let that one go.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, I've been called worse, so that's good. Good morning. It is 22 June. We made it through the summer solstice. We all got dressed and up. Undressed up in our all-togethers and danced around the moon last night. Oh, you didn't, you weren't, should have taken videos for that one. What? Oh yeah, with drones and the NSA, they probably do have videos, so you'll be seeing that on my Facebook page later. What do you mean? Okay, never mind that. It is, it's Thursday, and, let's have some fun here. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join the show. 888-663-6386. 888-663-6386. I know that nobody uses telephones any longer, and they just use your two fingers to text. I watch these people text, and they do. I don't know how it is. It's like. And kids can text when they're holding a shopping bag and walking down the street at the same time. And they start, tow, tow, tow. I don't know how they do it. I've never texted ever in my life. No. Really? Well, we're going to talk about cell phones and technology and stuff like that this first hour with an interesting man. And you'll meet him in just a momento. Next hour, Rick Rule. Now, he's going to be good. Rick Rule is the head banana at Organic Sprout Global Resource Investments in up in, I think he's in Vancouver. But Mr. Rule has been into gold, silver mining things, natural resources, energy, solar stuff. So we're gonna talk a lot about energy investment stocks, and so this will be fun. Yeah, he's a good one. This is a big company. And so we're going to kind of just pick his brain a little bit and see if we can find some fun places for you guys to invest in other than GMO foods or something like that. That's right. No, don't buy Monsanto here. Don't buy Monsanto. Well, you can if you want. So first up this morning, he's down in Florida. His name is Daniel DeBon. What a great name, DeBon. And he's recognized really around the world as an expert in EMF radiation, EMF shielding, EMF-related health issues, focus on the effects and exposure from mobile devices, laptops, tablets, cell phones. Thirty years of engineering experience in the telecommunications field. Wow. Worked for Bell and Bell Labs. And his book is A Radiation Nation, The Fallout of Modern Technology. Mr. DeBon, does that mean our hair is going to fall out or just our fallout?
Well, first of all, thank you, Patrick, for inviting me on your show. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And no, your hair won't fall out.
Well, good.
But maybe the diminished capacity in your brain will be more diminished as a result of exposure.
Oh, well, good. Well, that makes me feel good.
For me, that's a good thing.
That makes me feel good. So tell us about, you worked as an engineer-type geek in a lot of the big telecommunication companies?
Yeah, actually, I started many, many years ago when the only thing you had is push-button telephones that were wireline, years and years ago, when the cell phones actually began being introduced into the marketplace. So my jobs over the years were to analyze technologies, all technologies, in my laboratories and try to evaluate how they performed against standards. So we had a whole bunch of very practical experience in this area of exposures, emissions of electromagnetic radiation.
Really? So you were around when we had the first cell phones in the cars. Remember those guys?
Oh, I go back farther than that. Actually, I can tell you a story.
Yeah.
I was in a room with officers of one telephone company at the time.
Yeah.
And cell phones just began coming out, like what you were talking about.
What year?
You had a phone in your truck in the late 70s, early 80s.
Wow.
And I asked the officers, what's the next wave of stuff that you're going to be worried about as a company? And their response was that we are looking at Princess second line sales. That's where we see all our growth. Now, you got to remember, cell phones were just coming out at that time. So to give you an idea of how that's changed, that telephone company today, their only real business is wireless.
Yeah.
So it came upon them really fast in the late 70s, and it's been going strong ever since.
Huh. Just for reference, I don't really recall because I was never into them, but when did it really, when did the worm really turn on the cell phone use and the massive? There must have been a few years where it just, the technology happened and then it was just like everywhere.
Was there
time?
Patrick, that's a great question. You know, if you think about it, you know, when you and I grew up, we had no exposures, right? They just didn't exist because there was no, other than TV, you know, we had transmitters and radio transmitters that are emitting RF signals that we're receiving, but none of them were very close to us.
Uh-huh.
Well, fast forward to today, 10 years ago, and all of a sudden there was an explosion of use of cell phones, and to the point where so many of the younger generations, they don't even have wireline or landline phones. They only have wireless phones, and they use them all the time. In fact, their children are using cell phones as much as early as 6 years old. So it's really been over the last 10 years or so that there's been this real substantial growth. In fact, there are more cell phones than toilets in the world.
Oh, I could imagine. Sure, yeah.
It's amazing.
Was there a major technological breakthrough that caused the big leap?
I think society evolved more and more.
Culturally rather than technologically?
Yeah, right. Technology was there for 20 years. But,
really?
But it's over the last 10 that the convenience of size and convenience of use and availability with towers and everything else all merged with the demand of just-in-time services. So I think that was the catalyst. It was a sort of a thing that jumped up at us, and all of a sudden, everyone's using it.
So, talk to us like we're a young child or a golden retriever, as we like to say around here, and explain to us how the voice gets from point A to point B through the air. I mean, that's still pretty amazing to me.
Well, what happens when you use, I'm assuming you're thinking of a cell phone.
Yeah, cell phone, yeah.
What happened, I'll give you a little bit more detail. What happened 30 years ago when the standards actually were developed for cell phones, you would talk into a phone and that analog reception would be like encoded. Stuff would be captured, and then it would be put on an analog signal, a wave of information that would ride on that wave, and it was a digitally encoded message that would be transferred from the cell tower to the far end phone call, and then it would be converted back to audio on the far end. So you would have a fairly simple set of conversions going on in the use. Today, by the way, that's not true. They're no longer analog. when you talk on the phone, a cell phone, the message is encoded into a digital format that's transmitted out digitally. So it's always on, off, on, off, on, off. And it's getting to the other end the same way as it used to, but it's now a digital formatted signal.
So on, off is what are running our computers. It's just that's the same principle, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
On, off, on, off.
The reason why they can put so much stuff on wireless is because they keep on improving the digital capacity to take advantage of the bandwidth within the waves.
Right, right.
So it's all the digital stuff that's going on all around us that's continuously being improved.
So was there any concern or consideration or chat or anything about the potential hazards of EMF radiation at the very beginning?
Patrick, when the standard was created roughly 30 years ago, the FCC sort of decided to do was to evaluate what's the strength of the message, of the signal, so it doesn't harm the user. And what they did was they looked at the thermal impact. A thermal impact means, you know what a microwave oven is, right? And you put a piece of meat in a microwave oven and you turn the microwave oven on, it heats up the meat. Well, what is it doing? It's taking the water between the cells, heating it up, and that oscillates the cells, and that's what cooks your meat. It heats the meat up by oscillating the cells.
Right.
Well, a microwave oven is in the same frequency range as your RF signal.
Yes.
Your Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Your cell tower. It's virtually identical, but the energy is much less. So When they did the standard 30 years ago, they said, well, we got to make sure that the power coming out of a cell phone is not stronger than strong enough to heat up the small area around the head by 2 degrees. And it's for a 6-foot male that they modeled. And it was for a 6-foot male occasional use.
Oh, good.
I'll remind you, 30 years ago, when I was had friends that had cell phones. I didn't have many friends who had cell phones. They just didn't exist. So occasional use really meant maybe a little bit, 5 minutes, 10 minutes a day. It wasn't much because it was so new at the time.
Go ahead.
It was only thermal.
Thermal, yeah. So it was only the heat. So where did they come up with this idea of thermal, and that's all they looked at, just the heat coming off of the...
Because they assumed there was no biological impact.
They assumed.
Yeah, and by the way...
Oh, good science, for them.
Science has been very clear over the last 30 years. The biggest danger is not thermal. It's biological.
Okay, what's the difference?
Thermal means, like, it's going to heat it up, and then when it gets hot, there's something bad's going to happen to the body.
Okay.
Well, if it's biological, it's now hitting a cell, and it's impacting the cell long-term. May take 10 years, but that cell influence by that emission can become a biological thing. For example, you have problems sleeping at night. You have a cell phone right next to your bed table at night. It's a foot away. You can't sleep. Why? Well, because science tells us that the creation of melatonin that you use to help you sleep at night is interrupted. So it's the process that's interrupted. So it's not you're heating your body up that's the problem. It is impacting the functions of the body and the cells and the way they handle the toxin that they're being exposed to.
Mm-hmm. About a year ago, my computer geek was out here. I live out in the country, and we don't get much cell phone coverage at all. It's hard to even get a signal where I am, which is great. You know, it's great.
Right.
But he had a cell phone, and he's up high here in my studio, and he had it in his pocket, and I had my RF meter out because we measure these things, and I was just showing him that there's just nothing going on up here. I mean, on an RF meter, and so somebody called him, And he picked it out of his jeans there, and he pressed it, and he answered the phone, and he did get a signal. And boy, my RF meter went like, it really.
Right.
Okay, but exactly. So what I don't understand, though. So here it is. My little meter is measuring radio frequencies, which we know are not good. And we've done a lot of shows, Daniel, on, you know, how much can you live with, you know, if you're going to. Mm-hmm. But wasn't it there in the air already without him pressing the on button? Because I couldn't. Yeah, but the machine didn't read it before we pressed the on button.
Think about it this way. You have a cow in the middle of a field.
Yeah.
That cow is not transmitting anything. Nature doesn't transmit RF. But you have a tower a mile away. That tower is transmitting to that cow. So you're measuring nothing there because it's far away or very, very low.
Yeah, well, 4 miles away is the closest one.
All of a sudden, the cow picks up his cell phone and dials the phone, and now he's transmitting a RF signal to the tower.
Oh, that's what you're measuring. I picked up his phone transmitting stuff back to the tower.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what was going on. And that's dangerous stuff. And that's the stuff you're putting right to your head, right? Think about it. You put a cell phone to your head, it's directly touching. It's zero distance to the body.
Daniel DeBond is with us. His book is called Radiation Nation. He's been looking at this stuff for a long, long, long time. If you have a question, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, or if you care to use the phone, 888-663-6386, which nobody uses anymore because, you know, they don't even know how to dial, man. I can remember when I was in grade school, in high school, we had a dial phone, of course, and we had Underhill 7-6835. I mean, that's just it. I mean, you know, that was it. That was it. Underhill 7-6835. And you could, you know, if something would go wrong with the phone, you call the phone company, and now that afternoon the guy would come and knock on your door and fix it and, you know, thank you very much and not charge you anything. Boy, has times changed.
Yes, they have seriously changed.
Gee, holy moly, come on. Man, crazy, amazing. Okay, so let's talk about why Wi-Fi. So you go, I guess people with cell phones, they can just use them anywhere because I guess we're in just a soup of a Wi-Fi, right? We're just souped up anywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much,
so,
right?
The Wi-Fi is an RF signal that's very close to a cell tower signal.
Is it similar?
In terms of frequency. Oh, yeah, very close. It's 2.4 or 5 gigahertz, and a cell tower is 1.9 gigahertz. They're really to 40 gigahertz. So it's really roughly the same space.
Right.
But the power levels are different. A cell phone can go, you know, like 5 miles. A Wi-Fi can go 500 feet. So they're very different.
500 feet?
Yeah, they go pretty far.
Well, how do people like listen to our show in their cars? They don't like go 500 feet.
There could be a couple of ways they do that. They could actually using their Bluetooth to connect to the car, which is also an RF signal.
Right.
And then the car itself has a connection to the tower with a cell phone. So there's a way of it connecting. It could be just directly to the cell tower or indirectly through the Bluetooth.
But there's not.
And by the way, when your cell phone is in a car,
yeah,
it's the highest amplitude that the cell phone can generate because it has a problem getting out of the car and it's trying to get out. And every time it goes out, you know, you receive little bars that grow into a lot of bars. When it has a lot of bars, that means it's easy to get to the cell tower,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the power levels drop. But it's when it's really low, it's the cell phone saying, I can't get there, so I got to try to build out my transmission so I can touch the far end. Mm-hmm. And that's when... in a car, that's typically how it's operating at a high level of energy.
So I've seen the Bluetooth thing where you can just do hands-free and it goes through the radio speakers, I guess.
Yep.
Does that, of course, you don't have it to your head, so that's good. But does it also make the signal stronger inside the car?
Yes. Yeah, that's what my point was. Yeah. It's actually, a cell phone can be like three levels of energy, three levels of power transmitted. It can be really low when you're really close to the cell tower,
yeah,
or can be maxed out at 1.6 watts when you're far away. So the cell phone itself will modulate down to the whatever level it needs to communicate to the cell tower. That's how it operates. So when you're in a car, it's having a difficult time finding the tower, so it beefs up that cell signal as maximum as it can.
But I still have a disconnect where you said, Daniel, on the 500 feet. I mean, when people are driving along in the middle of
that's Wi-Fi,
but there's not a tower every 500 feet. So
no, because you're not using Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
Wi-Fi is where you have a router in your house or in your office, and that's transmitting and allowing your cell phone using Wi-Fi to connect to the Wi-Fi transmitters and receivers in the router, or you're talking with your laptop or your tablet is connecting with the Wi-Fi signal to the router to connect to your internet.
Yeah, but how are people getting the internet in the middle of the highway out in the middle of Texas?
They're using their cell tower connection.
Oh, they're using the cell tower.
Yeah, that's how they're doing it. Yeah, they're finding a path through their finding a path through their cell phone. But it's using the network, the cell tower network, to get that access.
Oh, that's why. That's how come 2-year-old kids can be in their car seat and texting their dad.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay. 888-663-6386 email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, we're learning a lot about this technology that, just put your phone down so you'll be able to do it. Well, my goodness. I've been playing more around with little drops of essential oils now and then. It's kind of fun. And what's cool about essential oils, they're really just plants. I mean, they're herbs, and they're just really very, very strong. So you can do a couple drops or something and play around with it if you want to just see how it affects you. And they're very powerful. And get yourself a book or two. We got a good one in our store. And the aromatherapy book. And then you can go to Living Libations and see their incredible selection of essential oils. And then read about where she gets them. And it's just crazy. I mean, all over the world. And they're distilled a certain way. And they're made a certain way. And it's just amazing how particular Nadine is on the quality. And then you want to get some really, really nice skin care and soaps and hair care and stuff like that. Man, really beautiful. I'm going to have to get the name of this. It's a really, I haven't used any kind of like smelly stuff probably 20, 30 years or so. I don't know. But I got some. And I'll have to give you the ingredients and exactly what I got. I did a barely little spray and went out with this lady the other night. And she goes, "Boy, you really smell good." Really? So, yeah. I used to wear these little Anyway, so Living Libations, it's really a great company. So if you'd like to do some of these things, just check it out. Hair, skin, nails, face. They got some really beautiful things. See Buckthorn for the face. I glop some of her stuff on. It's really nice. Living Libations through OneRadioNetwork.com. Previously with Dr. Ross Stewart, who just kind of came up with this, telling about how he works with people and their neurotransmitters.
How do we produce sufficient amounts of glutathione in the liver, which, of course, is a big filter for all the blood, pulling half-spent hormones, waste, dead cells, and other toxins out of the blood? The higher the level of glutathione, the longer a person is going to live and the better their blood is. And I'm glad you're doing a sulfur product. Once you start getting any of these kinds of symptoms, all the way from autism, all the way through Parkinson's, you can't get enough sulfur from eating broccoli and kale and cauliflower and garlic and onions. You can't get enough. You need to supplement it.
Well, the information just keeps on coming with sulfur. The sulfur that we promote is 99.97% pure, no additives, no excipients. Just click an order on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com. Yeah, that's an important point. There's nothing going on with this sulfur. And if you go on Amazon or places, you're going to find sulfur that's a lot less expensive. But it's just not the real deal because they have stuff in there and they produce kabillions of pounds of it. Well, I just made up the kabillions part, but they produced a lot of it. And, you know, and then that's how they do it. And then they got all this stuff in there, especially silicon dioxide, which is just not good. And just by itself, that silicon dioxide is yucky stuff. And then when you put in the sulfur, it doesn't even work. But sulfur has a love affair with heavy metals, And you just do like a teaspoon in the morning, teaspoon in the afternoon, at night, maybe late afternoon. And you rock and roll and you get 2 pounds in an order. And if you like more than 4 pounds, as many people do, just email me, patrick@oneradionetwork.com.
With prevalent economic uncertainty in the United States economy, many investors are looking for safe havens to protect their wealth. One of the best historic investments in the United States has been the acquisition of physical American gold and silver coins. From the 1790s to the 1930s, the United States government issued American money in the form of gold and silver coins available to the general public. You can reach us at SDL Numismatics at 1-800-878-2646. We'll be happy to educate investors on how to acquire American gold and silver coins. Call us today, 1-800-878-2646.
Okay, we're going to talk more about gold and silver and stuff with Rick Rule in about half an hour or so, so stay tuned. Let's see, gold is up $4.20, silver is up 11 cents, stock market's at 21,422, and crude oil is about 42 bucks. The dollar is pretty even, so kind of a quiet morning, not much going on. The boys obviously need a little more coffee, and then things will pick up later on after 4 or 5 cups. Well, you know, then just kind of does some weird things.
Know the source. One Radio Network. OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, we're having fun talking about technology with an expert on that. He has a book entitled The Fallout of Modern Technology. He's also got some solutions how to minimize some of the dangers, and we're going to talk about the kids now. And I was telling Dan, I was mentioning to you that I don't even use a cell phone.
Yep.
And that probably the last one in the world, and I'm on a list. you know, and probably going to, black helicopter will fly over my home someday and they're going to just drop them out, you know, just to entice me, right?
Yeah, they're going to find you out, Patrick. They're going to find you out.
That's right. That's right. I think there's 12 people on Earth, so let's get them.
Right.
That's right. Let's get them now. And if we drop 100 iPhones in different colors, he's bound to grab one.
Right. We're hoping.
That's right. But never mind. I'm sure somebody's going to figure out how to just... you know, put images through the air into our brains someday anyway. You know, we'll have to wear tinfoil on our head. Jeez, man, I don't know. It's crazy what's going on, really. So have you done a lot of research? And are the kids, is it a lot? I would suspect, I mean, we do shows on natural health, that it's just everything that we know about a six, as you said, the 6 foot man, and they did the standards on years ago. What could possibly be going on with the young kid, and these young kids, they get involved with this early on.
Yeah, Patrick, and that's the sort of the unfortunate fallout. There's just no doubt. When you and I grow up, as I said before, we didn't have exposures. Kids now, at 6 years old, they have cell phones in their hand. The standard we spoke about was to ensure the average 6 foot male wouldn't have a penetration of that signal by 2 inches. If you have a six-year-old child using that cell phone, it goes completely through their head.
What?
So all of a sudden, we have these communications sort of sources that are saturating the child. A child's body absorbs it more naturally because it's a soft tissue. It's premature. In the head, the skull is thinner, so there's less barriers of resistance, so the path goes through. Remember we were talking about the 2 degrees problem. Well, we're not so worried about the 2 degrees problem. We're worried about the biological problem, because we know for sure the cells within the brain, the frontal lobe particularly, are more susceptible than other parts of the body. You're never going to die of cancer of the hand from exposure from RF. But you clearly can be more exposed, and it can be more dangerous for you when it's close to your body and areas of soft tissue, like your frontal lobe or your heart, believe it or not. And in fact, Patrick, the government, National Toxicity Program, a federal government, spent $25 million over the last several years, and we released a report that was statistically significant. It was an epidemiology study, and what it said was, we are going to take cell tower transmitters, and we're going to expose a large statistically important sample. And then we're going to see if there is a statistically increase or decrease, or what kind of response the subjects would have to those exposures of those who were exposed and those who were not. The comparison found there was a 2% increase when there was heavy exposures to those exposed to those transmitters than the ones who were not. That was based on... very sound judge. Actually, the guy was really smart, because what he did, the testing lead, he was smart enough to know he had to remove the thermal impact and only deal with the biological. So what he found was the biological impact is clear, and there is a 2% increase in the cell of the body, and it's deterioration towards a tumor and sometimes cancerous.
Oh, 2% to deterioration of the cells.
Right. And in fact, that's consistent with, if you were to take a look at the data, the scientific data over the last 10 years, we talked about that a minute ago, there's been an increase of brain tumors of 2%. So
really?
It's consistent with, oh, yeah, this is no question about. And it's because of exposures. the more you're exposed, the more likely the cell itself responds negatively to it's a toxin. You know, I keep on saying toxin, and maybe I'll clarify that a little bit. You know, when you're multiply chemically sensitive,
mm-hmm.
you have volatile organic compounds, vapors in the air, gas vapors that are toxic to the body. And so when you have that and you get headaches or you don't feel well, you feel tired, maybe there's a lot of different symptoms associated with multiple chemical sensitivity. Well, the cell is reacting to a chemical it's being exposed to.
Yes.
Well, that's what's happening with a RF exposure. The body sees it as a toxin, so it reacts the same way. So if you're a hyper electrically sensitive, you 99.9% likely to be multiply chemically sensitive, yeah. Because the body's reacting the same way.
Is it a fair conjecture that this is so early, and it's only been, 20, 30 years really, that scientists, or even the best and the most objective scientists in the world, that as a culture, we don't really know long-term use of these things?
Oh, that's
either
that's
the phones or the Wi-Fi.
Case.
We just don't really know, do we?
Yeah. Well, think about this. You and I remember when I was 12 years old, which was many, many, many years ago, I smoked cigarettes because I wanted to be a big man. And at that time, there was virtually no public knowledge of any sort of links between, negative links between our health and the smoking of cigarettes. In fact, I can recall around 78, the chairman of Philip Morris was in front of a group of pediatricians in the UK, and he was asked, does cigarette smoking affect a pregnant woman? He said that absolutely not. However, the child could be born smaller, and what woman wouldn't want a smaller baby?
Oh,
that
was the mentality at
that time. Yeah. Also at that time, not known at the time to the general public, science knew it was a problem. It took 30 years to get that to be on the forefront of everyone's mind and to be common knowledge. That happened through the courts. Mm-hmm. As they started losing in courts, it became more and more obvious that things were changing and had to change on when we smoked and we need to be aware of the health impacts to that. That's the same parallel which is going on with electromagnetic radiation.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, in its infant stage, it's been around only 10 years. We don't have a whole bunch of experienced knowledge about it. So most of the studies are not statistically significant. And as such, it can be argued that the findings may or may not be valid. But we do have the World Health Organization. They consider an RF signal to be a Category 2B carcinogenic. That means they think of it exactly like arsenic.
Really? An RF signal?
Oh, yeah. Oh. World Health Organization. They identified it several years ago. Hmm. Yet, we're still catching up on and learning more and more. But what's interesting to me is we've actually, because I'm more of an engineer than a medical expert,
right.
I've seen the science of evaluating the impacts to the cell and the steps the cell takes in deterioration and ultimately the failure of the cell and the mechanics associated with it. So we're learning more and more and more, and it's really becoming a major debate. In fact, that's why I wrote the book. I didn't see a common knowledge understanding of exposures, and we had a lot of scientific evidence that talked about it from one vantage point, and some that had a compelling different view, not necessarily accurate view, but it's in controversy.
You know,
will it be that 10 years from now? Who knows?
Daniel, and I've always questioned this idea of how long, because from a real, if you look at things closely in the cells and it's all happening in the now, and it's all, everything is affecting everything, right? From that standpoint,
yeah.
I would conjecture that when you have a cell phone on your head, that it's affecting that cell that moment. And just because, I mean, I don't want to get spooky, but I don't think that, obviously, the longer you have it on there, the more it's going to affect it. But I think it would affect it, like, for a minute. Whether or not it stays there, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But it's got to, if it affects it, it affects it. So come on. So it the cell's not going to sit there and say, well, now that you've got it 20 minutes against there, then I'm going to do something. It doesn't even make sense. It's not even logical.
The reality of it is, we talked about electromagnetic hypersensitivity, right?
Right.
What's actually happening, the membrane of the cell is getting weaker and weaker and weaker. So it's saying to its neighbor, don't give me I'm not going to give you protein today. I'm not going to give you what I typically give you. And that's how, when people say, I got a headache, I'm not feeling well, it's literally impacting the way one cell speaks to another. And what happens, particularly with electro hypersensitive, they actually, it takes less and less exposure to have the same impact.
Yeah.
So where originally it may have taken days and days and days before they felt something, when they're exposed to the emission, they feel it now within a second. They're more sensitive. Their body becomes more sensitive to the exposures. And then, you know, we're talking about the impact of the long-term impacts to the cell. Once the membrane deteriorates, it actually gets penetrated by calcium. That calcium builds up, and nitride oxide builds within the cell, and then it mutates. And then there is potential for DNA damage. In fact, there are some scientists that say, if you have a 12-year-old child, let me tell you about a male. After several hours of exposure of a Wi-Fi on the lap of a boy, 25% of the male sperm is immobile.
Oh, good.
For a female, there's an argument by some experts that says that the cell can get damaged in the womb, and the egg can potentially transfer that mutated cell, that DNA-damaged cell, to a subtending generation. And we know for sure that those RF signals can penetrate the womb.
Wow. Yeah, I put some meters on the bottom of my little MacBook, little notebook thing. And boy, it's really, really strong. I don't put that puppy on my lap. And there's actually people, we interviewed a fellow years ago, David Sarita, and he said, well, I got something that you can just set your laptop on, even on your table, or especially if you put it in your lap and it block it everything. And so he sent me one, and boy, it does too. I put my little meters under there and nothing comes out of that puppy. It's just, so people can do stuff. But I mean, you go through the airports and everybody's putting these things right on their laps, and the boys and the girls down there in the nether regions, it's just not good, you know?
No. There's no doubt that science knows it's very clear there's direct links between the transmitters and the negative impacts to the body. Hmm. Why? It's soft tissue. Where there's soft tissue, there's more potential for more dangerous side effects.
You know, and just big picture too, if you think about the last 20 or 30 years and then more and more people using cell phones more and more, and it's hard to even get a landline sometime. We can talk a little bit about that. And what's going on in the health arena, and the amount of money that people are spending on trying to stay well with, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's just growing and growing, and our statistics keep. So there's got to be a connection there, isn't there? There's got to be.
Yep.
I mean, who knows?
Yeah,
how could you connect?
It's really funny, Patrick. What I noticed when I was doing the book, and part of the reason I wrote the book, was because I saw really, really good science being done in Sweden, and by Dr. Ali Johnston, in the U.S. With Dr. Carpenter. There's been a lot of people doing really good work, but they didn't talk to the oncologist. They didn't talk to the experts in cancer. Before I released the book, I sent it to one of the most well-known radiologists in the U.S.
Yeah.
He was shocked that that data existed.
Really?
Yeah. He didn't even realize that for him, he deals with ionized radiation. That means it's a very high frequency emission that has a high energy. When that is exposures are more than it should be, it actually knocks the electron out of its orbit, charges it, and that's how you become mutated and get cancer. So he was in the ionized space, and I released a book, and I explained to him, it's not just ionized. It's non-ionized. The net result can be the same. It can go towards a mutated DNA damaged cell, and it's different mechanics, but that's where the end result is. So he was, like, surprised. So I saw this national break between what science research was learning and what practicing physicians were learning.
Daniel DeBon is with us. His book is called The Fallout of Modern Technology. The Fallout of Modern Technology. Here's an email for you. It's kind of interesting. Let me grab it here. In a recent presentation on 5G to residents in Montgomery County, Maryland, the county council suggested that they were helpless in the face of federal requirements to implement technology. They just had to implement the technology. What's up with that? Is this because the states have signed cooperative agreements with the feds to get federal money in exchange for implementing the technology, like smart meters and many other things? These always turn out to be unfunded mandates that then require taxpayers to pay for the implementation of the latest boondoggle. In the presentation, one of the vendors of the technology was stating the benefits of 5G, foremost being that 5G would enable the users of Siri's Apple Intelligence Personal Assistant to keep constant contact and clear response. And every time someone asked Siri a question, they provided the 5G industry and government supporters with justifications for spreading the technology. Can Daniel comment on the use of intelligent personnel assistants, GPS, things like that? Wow.
Yeah, that is an extraordinarily good question, and let me tell you why. There is mandates to local municipalities where they don't have the choices of deciding if there was a 5G transmitter in their community or not. They have no choice.
Huh.
And that's been driven down from the federal level. And this is a huge debate. Now I'm going to tell you the difference between 4G and 5G and why it's important to know the difference. You asked me before, can you explain to me how stuff works?
Yeah.
How does it get to the other place?
Right.
And I said to you, it was analog early on, then it converted to digital, and all of a sudden we have higher speeds up to 10 megahertz, 10 meg of a speed on the line. So now 5G comes along, and those 4G are, as I said, 1.9 to about 4 a gigahertz. When you go to 5G, it can be up to 30 gigahertz. So it's much, much faster. It's
wow.
Beginning to approach the ionized energy. Not quite, but that's the path it's taking. But that's not why it's more dangerous. I didn't explain the difference between analog and digital. Now I will. And you caught a little bit before. An analog signal is a constant load. So when it hits the cell, it's hitting a cell at a constant rate. And with a digital, you have a pulsing on and off, on and off. What does that mean? What that means is, let's have an analogy. If I take a piece of steel, and put it on a piece of concrete, and I put 10,000 pounds onto the concrete, it doesn't break. If I lift it up and I drop it down and keep on lifting up, dropping it up, down, it breaks.
Oh.
What's the difference?
Yeah.
It's a jackhammer. Mm. It's on and off.
On and off.
Now, we know the analog to digital is different. And so we now know there's impacts to the cell on up to 5 gigahertz, let's say. What happens when it goes to 40? Well, the way they're improving the optimization of the utilization of that that communications channel is they're doubling the coding. They're creating two streams of information. What does that mean? If you had a pool and you wanted to fill it with water, and you took a hose and you put water in, your wife gets mad at you, and she says, when is it going to be done? And, okay, I'll get another hose. I'll put two hoses in, and I'll fill it up twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what's happening with 5G. They're actually putting double jackhammers into the transmitters.
So it's exponential. So someday we'll have 10G or 20G, right? Because, you know, that's what they do. And then at that point, it gets to an ionization stage, and that's more dangerous, you're saying?
No, there's a big gap between it. My point was, it's going towards a higher frequency range of use that's touching your body.
Is that worse?
By 3 to 5. So there's a likely impact just from the frequency range difference.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not even worried about that difference because I think it's marginal. What I don't think is marginal is where they now go from one hose to two hoses of data. That's the jackhammer data that we know for sure is hitting the membrane of the cell, and there's more than enough sufficient study and research that we know that signal is dangerous to the body, no less, double.
Do you think there'll be a day when you move somewhere and you call the phone company and they just don't offer in landlines?
Oh, yeah. Great question.
Yeah.
Underlying that question is, how much does it cost me to maintain that network? It costs millions and millions and millions of dollars to make the copper wire in the networks work. So it's not just technology driving them, but it's cost of plant operations that's driving them.
Sure.
They want to get out of the high cost of business.
Yeah, but
best way to do it is go to cell phone.
Yeah, but if you're going people want copper for their internet so they can get high speed, right? So that's not going to go away. I mean, so this copper
don't need it with 5G.
Oh,
5G
yeah.
will give you 50 megabits per second.
What about all this copper they're spending money on? That's going to be obsolete. Can't they use that for phones?
They could, but the maintenance of those copper networks, those copper facilities are high.
You're really seeing a day someday where it's just all going to be whatever, 10, 20G through the air, blep, and that's it. You know.
Yep, that's what they're going to do. Remember my story about the second line of Princess phones?
Yeah.
That's where they thought it was, in the copper network. What ended up happening since the beginning of the 80s was the telephone companies bought up wireless networks. They didn't start networks. They bought them up. They bought everybody up.
Yeah.
And what they found was that's where the growth revenue was. And if you're running a business, you're going to go where the growth revenue is.
Yeah. Here's a good and a good one to kind of wrap up with. Matt writes in, what are the practical things we can do beyond avoidance? I work in an environment saturated with consumer electronic devices. We make cell phones, test equipment, and stuff like that. Have you seen technologies that really do protect us from all this stuff?
Yes, actually, you had pointed out that I actually am an expert in the shielding, and we provide it to the network. But you have something for your laptop, or we have some stuff like that. But before I give any detail of that, what I want to suggest is it's very easy to reduce exposures. the way you want to think of it is, if you have something against your head, it is the most dangerous to the body. If you take it 1 foot away, 80% of that danger is gone. By four feet, 98.
Wow.
In other words, if you don't have to be exposed, and you can be there, be some distance, that's your best friend. And if you use something close to your head and you use it for a couple of minutes a day, I wouldn't worry about it. So exposure durations are the other thing you can manage. And so simply by staying away. And one other point, if we create an analogy of what a transmitter is in a room, let's call it a bee. One bee won't kill you if it's in a room. If there are 1,000 bees, 1,000 bees can kill. So you want to make sure you remove the number of transmitters in a room and reduce them as much as you can, and that also. At night, have a timer on your router. Just turn it off.
Yeah, turn it off.
Just turn it off.
We've measured some of the base stations of these portable phones that many people love. Boy, there's some stuff coming out of there that you don't even want to think about, with some good meters, too. And people don't know that when they buy these things.
Oh, yeah. And you know, we mentioned about the bedroom thing.
Sure.
Get all that stuff out of your bedroom.
Get it out. Get it out. Get,
you do not want that. At least you want it 20 foot or more away. You know, I always recommend if you're working in an office space, you know, have it, you know, the farthest way you can get to from the router is you can get it, and you're all right. I wouldn't panic. You're not going to die from it, but you got to knowingly think through where all your cell phone. You don't use one, but if you had one, a cell phone generates a signal to the cell tower, an RF signal. It also can generate a Wi-Fi signal to your Wi-Fi router. And it also can do a Bluetooth signal. We talked about all of these, all coming out of one source. So when you put it to your head, you have three transmitters next to your head.
Yeah, here's a final question. This is from Cecile, and we got just a minute or so. I'm looking to buy a new car, but all of them have Wi-Fi connection antennas already jacked in there, and also GPS.
Yep.
Is GPS safe to have that in your car? And what about... Am I getting exposed? She's saying I'm trying to modify her thing because it's real long. I'm just going through it. She wants to know is if when you're driving around and the self and the antenna thing is hooked up in your car and it's active, are we being exposed to that? Is that going back and forth?
It's there's enough distance. If you want to make sure that you're not being exposed, make sure your cell phone itself is not close to you. Just move it away.
If she didn't have a cell phone, is she still getting zapped?
No.
Oh, you're not?
No. Not being used.
Because nobody's... Oh, it's that whole thing what you explained earlier. It's not sending something back to the...
Right.
To the tower. I see.
And that's what you're worried about.
I see. Yeah.
But let's get back. There are things you can also do that are physical. And that is, you can shield signal. My son was using his laptop on his lap. And my wife says that she wants grandchildren. That's why I got into this business. I looked in the industry, and no one really provided the protection we needed. So I actually created a product that actually shields the emissions to the body. And now we have tablet, cell phone, and
Cool. What's the name
laptop.
Of the, what's your website?
DefenderShield.com.
I'm sorry? Defend?
The DefenderShield.com.
I see.
And I did it because I wanted to protect my own sons. And because I had such a lot of experience in this stuff, I realized when I looked in the industry, most of the industry didn't understand the problem.
And you're an engineer, so you figured out and be able to test it and see if it works, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, cool. DefenderShield.com. Well, you're a fun guy to talk to. Best of luck with your book, and it is called... The Fallout of Modern Technology, Daniel DeBon. And then we'll put a link to that site, too, if people want to look at your stuff, DefenderShield.com, on the show page. Daniel, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed your time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you, sir.